Mukham karoti vachalam prantham gayate vim yatripa tamaham bande shri gurum dinatavinam. In the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, we learned that what did we learn? What did we learn in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita? What was the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita about?
Transcendental knowledge.
Yes. What about transcendental knowledge? What about transcendental knowledge?
How to obtain transcendental knowledge?
Learn that there are many types of sacrifices, and ultimately they all lead to transcendental knowledge.
Mm. Yes. Right. So Krishna was encouraging action. Right? But action for a particular purpose. He's also talking about inaction in action and action in inaction. He, at the end of the fourth chapter, Krishna is encouraging Arjuna to be renounced. And he was glorifying the attainment of transcendental knowledge. Right? So, what's happened is, or what's happening now in the fifth chapter, in the beginning of the fifth chapter, Krishna's sort of encouraging action, but then he's also encouraging correlation of knowledge, spiritual knowledge. There's the inaction in action and action in action, all these sort of things. A little confusing for Arjuna. But Prabhupada makes the point, Arjuna is not confused. But rather, he is inquiring on our behalf. So his bewilderment is really for our benefit. Because there's a traditional sort of a concept that, you know, the cultivation of knowledge, even within ISKCON, even within the devotees or amongst the devotees, is this idea that, I've got to sit down and study the books and then I'll become learned. Well, that's not always the case. In fact, they sit down to study the books and fall asleep. That means they should rest on a little bit more. But one of the things that I got out of the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita was that sacrifice is required. And sacrifice, generally speaking, requires effort. And especially in this chapter, this is solidified a little bit more in this first section. The consciousness of a person who engages themselves in active devotional service. Because on one hand, renunciation, cultivation of knowledge, that sort of implies, withdrawing from the world and giving up engagements and being renounced. And yet on the other side, Krishna has, he's encouraging, now get up and fight. So sort of like this is a conflict, even for devotees within ISKCON. I've got to be active in devotional service, but hang on a second, I've got to study Prabhupada's books, or I've got to chant more, I've got to chant better, or whatever. And there's a fear, in one sense, there's a fear of being engaged again in activities which we would normally correlate or relate or associate with, materialistic activities. Whereas as Prabhupada points out, you know, the activities of the devotee, the activities of the kami, they may appear to be similar, but what's really important is the knowledge, you know, the basis upon which one, the basis upon which one acts, in other words, one understands, I'm not the body actually, I'm a spirit soul, and I'm a servant of Krishna, so therefore I'm going to engage in Krishna's service, and that's what Krishna's encouraging here. Get up and fight means get up and do something. And don't be afraid of the consequences. In other words, when our devotional activities are motivated by a proper knowledge or understanding of who we are and why we're doing it, and that our activities are performed with the right motivation. In other words, there's detachment. And this is what the sacrifice is all about. And we'll look at that. That's developed in this more in the last verse of this section that we're going to look at tonight. So, in the fourth chapter, Krishna told Arjuna that all kinds of sacrificial work culminate in knowledge, spiritual knowledge. However, at the end of the fourth chapter, Krishna advised Arjuna to wake up and fight, being situated in perfect knowledge. Therefore, by simultaneously stressing the importance of both work in devotion and in action in knowledge, Krishna has perplexed Arjuna and confused his determination. So he's become confused. And so this is this, you know, Arjuna then asks, first of all you asked me to renounce work, then he goes, then you recommend me to work with devotion. So which of the two is better? And in fact, actually, you know, both can be conducive or are conducive in certain circumstances to spiritual life. Even when we become devotees, or dedicate ourselves to devotional service, then we generally give up certain things. So renunciation in and of itself has its place. But of the two, Krishna will, you know, renunciation or engagement, of the two, Krishna will tell us definitely what he prefers, or which he sees as being the most powerful and potent. Yeah. Arjuna thinks that renunciation involves stopping all kinds of work, because work and renunciation are, to him, they appear to be incompatible. At the end of the fourth chapter, the Lord advised Arjuna to wake up and fight, being situated in perfect knowledge. This is the purport to the first verse. Therefore, by simultaneously stressing the importance of both work in devotion and inaction in knowledge, Krishna has perplexed Arjuna and confused his determination. Arjuna understands that renunciation in knowledge involves cessation of all kinds of work performed as sense activities. But if one performs work in devotional service, then how is work stopped? In other words, he thinks that sannyas, or renunciation in knowledge, should be altogether free from all kinds of activity, because work and renunciation appear to him to be incompatible. If he is not to have understood that work in full knowledge is non-reactive and is therefore the same as inaction. This is action in inaction and inaction in action. He inquires, therefore, whether he should cease work altogether or work with full knowledge. Arjuna has not understood that work in full knowledge causes no reaction and is therefore the same as inaction. Hmm. So what does Krishna say? Both are good for liberation. Renunciation of work and work in devotion are both good for liberation. But of the two, work in devotional service is better than renunciation of work. Prabhupada gives the example of the impersonalists who will renounce everything. They'll show a picture of them, somebody puts money in their hand and they'll just... The Prabhupada said, you can take a picture of me giving, taking in millions of dollars. So we don't just renounce, we do renounce something, but it's a renunciation, we give up bad association. We stop certain activities. So we do embrace renunciation, but as a support for engaging in devotional activities, devotional service. Jnana or knowledge, this is in the purport. For knowledge that one is not this material body but spirit soul is not sufficient for liberation. One has to act in the status of spirit soul, otherwise there is no escape from material bondage. And so this is the idea of this Sankhya yoga system, is to retire from worldly activities and then meditate and study the Shastra and try to cultivate an understanding of the creation by analysing all of its different parts, with the goal, the end result, being that one will identify the core or the most essential element, which is the spiritual part, as being separate from all of those things. So the end result of this renunciation is to ultimately come to a spiritual understanding. But, there's always a danger of falling down. There are examples of yogis who have performed, great austerity, Solvari Muni, who, meditated underwater for thousands of years. He was a very advanced yogi, but he just happened to open his eyes up and see a couple of fish engaging in some sensual union, and he was agitated to then leave his position as a yogi and eventually married was only one daughter, wasn't it? One daughter of the king, or was it more
50
than
50 daughters.
50, something like that. Of course, there was a reason for that, because he committed an offence to Garuda. Is that right? Yeah, he criticised Garuda. But Garuda was coming to the Jamuna and eating the snakes, right? Something like that. Or was he eating the fish? I can't remember.
He was eating the fish.
Eating the snakes.
Eating the fish.
Was he eating Kali?
No, it was an enemy of... anyway, whatever, we won't go into that. I've forgotten. One has to act in the status of spirit soul. Just understanding that your spirit soul is not enough. You need to act on the platform of spirit soul. Action in Krishna consciousness is not meant to be fruitive action. Lord Chaitanya praised, Nādanam. Najanam, Prasandaram, Kavitamba, Jagadisha Kamaye, Mama Janari Jamanishare, Bhavatan Bhakti Ahoitiki Twahi. He says, I don't want Najanam, I don't want any wealth. Najanam,
I don't want any followers. Nasundari, any beautiful women. So the motivation of a devotee is, I just like to do service to please Krishna and my spiritual master. And I'm happy doing that. That's my satisfaction. And the devotee gets a lot of satisfaction out of just doing service. Because sometimes devotional service is performed with a material motivation. And then you do get reactions to that. I mean, you might not get necessarily what you wanted either. But pure devotional service is free from material consideration. And as such, is then very, very, very different to that fruitive activity, which brings with it reactions. It's purifying. That's what we're reading in the fourth chapter. That it's a sacrifice. But if you engage in devotional service, sacrificing your whatever material conceptions you might have, acting on a spiritual platform, then the end result of that is transcendental knowledge. One gets transcendental knowledge. And of course, in transcendental knowledge, one will then continue on with one's devotional service. Understanding, yes, devotional service should be performed purely, pure in heart. Without Krishna consciousness, mere renunciation of fruitive activities does not actually purify the heart of a conditioned soul. In fact, renunciation can make the heart harder. Because basically you're just performing austerities on the strength of your determination. I'm not going to do it, I'm not going to do it, I'm not going to do it. Whatever it is that I'm not going to do. And of course, in the process of not doing it, you're just thinking about it all the time. And then what happens? Eventually, what do? You go and do it. I've had enough. I give in. I surrender. The mind and the senses just gang up on us. And then we lose control. So that's the danger of just renunciation. Although renunciation is good. It's not that we don't. And Krishna says, yes, it's good. But of the two, better is devotional activities, wherein all of the mind and the senses and everything can be engaged. In the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is described, is named Rishikesh, he's the master of the senses. So if we engage our mind and senses in the service of the master of the senses, then he controls the forest. He keeps us, off the streets. And engaged in positive activities. One who neither hates, and this is the mood, right? This is a mood of a devotee who's engaged in devotional service purely motivated. Naishkam karma yogi, or yoga. He's not motivated by material desire, but he understands this is my duty, this is my service, and I'll perform it without attachment. Geryasa nitya sannyasi. This is a sannyasi, right? Because that's what, in one sense, Arjuna is a bit confused. You want me to be a sannyasi, but at the same time you want me to be a kami. That, a devotee who acts unattached to the results of his work is also a sannyasi. In fact, Prabhupada criticizes the sannyasis because he says, this cloth, he's pointing to his own cloth, he says, it's only worth about 2 pice. And you get some dye, and you colour it, and then you go around and beg from people. And then all you do is become a burden on everybody. just create trouble for others. So he said, what kind of sannyasi is that? Prabhupada would criticize that kind of a sannyasi. Whereas the, you know, the sannyas, the idea of sannyas for the Vaishnavas or for the devotees is that nothing belongs to me, actually everything belongs to Krishna, so how can I give it up? It's not mine anyway. What is this idea of renunciation? And so, this is where knowledge comes in. Understanding who I am, and who Krishna is, and who I belong to, and who everything else belongs to. I can use everything in Krishna's service. That's a true sannyasi. Huh? And what's his mentality? One who neither hates nor desires the fruits of his activities is known to be always renounced. So if you get something bad, it's Krishna's mercy. If you get something good, it's Krishna's mercy. And I mentioned that the other day in class. You know, it struck me when Prabhupada said in his diary, he said, you know, after his manuscript and his typewriter and things had been stolen, he said, Krishna gives it and Krishna takes it away. So it really exemplified this attitude of detachment. Could you imagine if you had your most prized possession stolen? In the story of Ramanujacharya, who was concerned about how his brahmacharis were becoming so attached to their facility, of meager facility they had. And you know, he demonstrated that by getting their copens and cloth and changing them all around and putting them in different spots. And when they get their washing, they all go up and say, oh, what's happening here? You know, who's got my copens? Who's got my... You can relate to that. Yeah. And then He illustrated the renunciation of his grihastha disciples. There was one couple who were very faithful and loyal and attached to each other, but then he got one of the brahmacharis to go and take the jewellery from the wife.
First of all, the brahmacharis were saying how they were worthy of being his disciple.
That's right, they were criticising the household.
Yeah, criticising them, yeah.
Yeah, and then, when the thief was taking the jewellery, the wife rolled over. And so the thief ran off. He got, you know, shocked or, you know, surprised. And so the husband criticised the wife. He said, what did you do that for? He could have taken it if he needed something, he could have taken it. Why didn't you allow him to take the other bangles that he had on the other arm? She said, well, I rolled over so that he could do that. He went off. Yeah, they were attached to the facility that they had. They were prepared to give it up. Obviously, you know, if the brahmachari is coming to steal our jewellery, that means he must need it. Anyway, that's just an example. Such a person is free from all dualities. Nirdvandva hi, nirdvandva hi mahabaho. Nirdvandva. Free from all dualities. And here it's not. It's an interesting thing here. It says, Shukam bandhat pramuchate. Pramuchate means completely liberated. But there's an interesting word here. Sukam. Happily. You know, devotee, susukam karta madhyayam, the process of devotional service, we're performed in the right mood and mentality, we're dependent on Krishna, and the devotee becomes happy, satisfied. And not only that, they become enlightened. Huh? Merely renouncing all activities, yet not engaging in the devotional service of the Lord, cannot make one happy. You know, I've seen that sometimes devotees, you know, they become super renounced about their eating. thinking that's how I'm making advancement.
But they're not happy.
And yet those devotees who like to take prasadam, they're always quite jolly. Of course, you know, if you're eating, like Prabhupada says, not eating and sleeping, eating and working. Prabhupada, there was one verse that Prabhupada, what is it? Oh, I forgot what it is now. This is interesting. Just by becoming renounced without devotional service, it's interesting, look at this. Dukam aptum ayogataha. How Prabhupada translates that. Without devotional service, what do you get? Dukkham. See that? Dukkham aptum ayogataha. Means, without devotional service, you'll be burdened with distress if you're just being a renunciate.
That's verse
3, no, I'm up to verse 6 now.
Oh,
okay. One more before I head. We're nearly finished. It's going to be an early night tonight, unless we do some exercises. So in the previous verse, 5.5, right? Oh, maybe I went too, did I go too far? I did it. All right, no, 5.4. Actually, no, I did. Yoga yukta munir brahma. One engaged in devotional service very quickly gets the supreme without delay. Okay, let's get to number 4. I really jumped right ahead there. So, in essence, there is no difference between karma yoga or devotional service and sankhya. Because the aim ultimately of both is to understand Vishnu. Let's look at the purport to text 4. The aim of the analytical study of the material world is to find the soul of existence. The soul of the material world is Vishnu, or the super soul. Devotional service to the Lord entails service to the super soul. One process is to find the root of the tree, the other is to water the root. The real student of Sankhya philosophy finds the root of the material world, Vishnu, and then in perfect knowledge engages himself in the service of the Lord. Therefore, in essence, there is no difference between the two, because the aim of both is Vishnu. Those who do not know the ultimate say that the purposes of Sankhya and Karma Yoga are not the same, but one who is learned knows the unifying aim in these different processes. You know, we were reading in the fourth chapter how there are lots of different types of sacrifices, the anashram system, the yoga practice, the inward breath into the outward breath. What else were there? Different sacrifices. For the brahmacharis, for the grihasthas. There's all these different sacrifices. Now, Prabhupada makes a point that one could confuse all of them as being different processes, just as one could confuse the process of Sankhya as being different from the process of Karma Yoga or devotional service. Right? So, and you see that even in this in this day and age, it gets confused. Prabhupada talks about how mathematics at the basic level, 2 + 2 = 4, and you know, at school when we were doing our arithmetic, that's the most basic sort of level of math you can get. But even at algebra or you know, quantum physics, 2 + 2 was always going to be equal to 4. And so the principle remains the same, although there appears to be a great deal of difference between the different types of mirrors. There's a greater level of sophistication, but still the basic principles remain the same. So the basic principle of all of these different types of sacrifice, and in fact all of the different religious, even the different religious systems that we see, the basic principle is to perform some sacrifice so that one can gradually be elevated to the position of transcendental knowledge. Just like yesterday, I had some students come from the Bible College, and they were asking me, you know, do you believe that you have the only way back to God?
There is only one way.
There's only one way.
There's only one path, and we're all on the same path.
There is one way. One way, the truth and the light. In fact, actually, Prabhupada calls Krishna consciousness the truth and the light. What is it? Krishna Surya Sam Maya Vaya Andhaka Yaham Krishna Tahanai Maya Adhika. Krishna is like the sun and Maya is like the darkness. When we come in contact with Krishna, then we become enlightened. So anyway, I said to the you know how I explained it to the students? I said that actually, all religions are useful in the sense that they help elevate the practitioner from the point that they happen to be on, just like all of these different sacrifices, the performance of Sankhya Yoga helps those persons who are attracted to that process. And so therefore, we actually encourage everybody who's on a spiritual path. And they were actually surprised because I was telling them about my mum and dad, who used to push me to church every Sunday, which I didn't particularly like at the time. And you know, eventually by the time I was 15 or 16, I won the battle and could sleep in on Sunday mornings. But I told them how I went home on my well, it was my mother's and father's 50th wedding anniversary, around about that time. And then I noticed, in the visits leading up to that, I noticed that my parents weren't going to church anymore. They said, hey, what's going on here? How come you don't go to church? And my mum said to me, she said, there's so much bad going on in the world, it's hard to have faith in God. That's what my mum said to me. And I said, Mum, you can't blame God for the stupid thing that men do. He's not responsible for what they do, that's their mistakes. So you can't blame him for that. But but then I told him, I said, I noticed on the 50th wedding anniversary, on the day that my mum and dad got up and went to church that day. So I said, they're not completely lost. So they were appreciating that one of the students said, I find it interesting that you were encouraging your parents to go to church. Because they were probably thinking, how come he's a Hare Krishna? Why is he trying to convert them to become a Hare Krishna? Huh? And of course Krishna says, don't disturb the minds of the ignorant, but encourage them in acts of devotion. Right? Encourage them in what they're doing.
So,
Prabhupada makes his point that, you know, we, whether one's a Hindu or a Muslim or a Christian or whatever, we actually encourage everybody to engage in these activities because the end result is the same. As Adam pointed out, we're all on the same path. That doesn't mean we're all going to end up at the same destination, because some are going forwards and some are going away. So in essence, there's no difference between the two. But of the two, what does Krishna recommend? He recommends engagement in devotional service is preferable to just renunciation. Right?
Yes, you said, like, if there is people of other religion, they are very true to religion, they follow it.
Yeah.
So, do you say that they just stick to that, or everybody has to get a Krishna consciousness?
What do we say?
Do we...
what do you say?
They have to get Krishna consciousness, but if they are true to their religion...
Yeah. Well, here's another thing that I told them. I said, you know, the people who want to force everybody to be part of their religion, they're what we call the Kanishta Adhikari, a neophyte. A neophyte thinks I'm the best devotee and everybody should be like me, right? Because I'm following the best path. And you can find that kind of devotee, a Christian, Muslim, probably even a Hindu. Well, the Hindus tend to be a little bit more laid back. But this is actually the mentality, this is a bit of a neophyte mentality. You know, everybody's got to surrender to the thing that I'm doing, because it's the best. And the subtle, well, not so subtle, underlining of all of that is because I'm the best. Whereas Majjhima Adhikari, he hopefully has made a little bit of advance and he realises actually I'm not the best devotee. You know, I'm aspiring to be the best devotee, but I've got to polish up a few. There's a few things in my repertoire that I need to polish up because I'm not too proficient at those things. And so consequently then, you know, he tends to appreciate others. So, you know, he sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he worships him, and he makes friends with the devotees. He avoids bad association, right? Keeps aloof from bad association. But when he finds somebody who's amenable to the principles of spiritual life, to the process of devotional activities, or to devotional activities, then he'll encourage them. Right? He'll encourage them. And it's interesting, you know, the Uttama Adhikari, on the topmost level, he doesn't think he's a devotee at all. He thinks everybody else is a better devotee than him. And so he actually doesn't preach. And he thinks, I'm not worthy of preaching. I'm too fallen. And everybody else is a better devotee than me. That's how that Uttama Adhikari is on the topmost platform. And in fact, as Prabhupada points out, in order for the Uttama Adhikari to preach, he has to actually come back down to the Majjhima level to again see the difference between, you know, the devotees and the non-devotees and the innocent and so on. So, you know, when they ask me, you know, what is the, have you got the best, are you following the best path? Is your path the only way? Then I explained to it like that. You actually, you know, you shouldn't see, one has to be careful about seeing like that. We're convinced and we know that devotional service is, you know, practical, it's positive, that it has results. But, it can't be really silent. To go away, Richard. Sorry, we don't want any.
You play the sound detection.
No, it vibrates when you put it on silent. can't make it actually clear. So we'll naturally encourage people to take the Krishna consciousness because we know it works. Right? It's effective. But you know, I don't personally encourage people to take the Krishna consciousness because if you're not doing this, then you know you're gonna go to hell. Kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? Nobody's really attracted to that. In fact, you know, people are more attracted to the qualities of the devotees and the friendship and the associations. And the religious experience that you get out of being a devotee, that's far more satisfying than knowing, oh, I'm on the best side. I'm on the best team, kind of thing. So because all of these devotional activities are, and even the process of sankhya is designed to come to the point of transcendental knowledge, then there's actually no difference between the two. One shouldn't see the difference, rather understand that they're at different stages or at different levels on the path. And Krishna actually wants Arjuna to engage in devotional service, basically fight. Wasn't it at the end of the, you know, of hearing the Bhagavad Gita that Arjuna was, you know, put on his sannyas robes and went off and renounced everything. Text 5. Yeah. Although superficially, and this is illustrates this point, or confirms this point, although superficially sankhya appears to involve detachment from matter and devotion appears to involve attachment to work, they are the same because one who is attached to Krishna is automatically detached from matter. Even if a devotee is dealing with millions and millions of dollars, he's not thinking, oh, this is all mine and I can use it for myself. Prabhupada explains, anasaktasya vishayam yithaham vayunjitaha. Anasaktasya vishayam means he engages his senses in devotional service, but with detachment. So in other words, you know, we have to eat. Here's an example, you know, at the first Sunday feast, the devotees said they had a fairly, you know, simple regime, but then the Sunday feast, Prabhupada would cook samosas and sweet rice and halva and a couple of different types of sabjis with curd, and the devotees were a little bit surprised because they thought, you know, spiritual life was supposed to be, you know, super renounced. And Prabhupada was encouraging them, no, eat more, eat more, eat more. Huh? Waddle like a duck. So, you know, we're encouraged to eat in a way that we're centrally satisfied and so we can be nourished and you know, strong in the performance of our devotional service. Of course, on the other hand, that anasaktasya vishayan is a warning that we should not overeat, right? Overindulge, mind you. So the devotees will. Another example. When Dhruva Maharaja's brother was killed by the Yakshas? Then he fought with them and killed them. But after a while, he was slaughtering, you know, thousands of them. And so Kavera had to come and tap him on the shoulder and say, Dhruva, this is probably, you know, you've taught them a lesson, now it's time to stop. So, you know, even in some circumstances, violence is appropriate. Huh? As we see on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, it was appropriate. The devotees will defend themselves. But it's not that one becomes totally absorbed in violence for fighting for Krishna. You know, some people, I've seen it actually, sometimes the devotees would go out on Harinam and they would actually deliberately try to get into a fight with people. I don't know. I've seen some strange things in my time. It's probably not the last. No, but you really have to understand what it was like. Now I think about it, a bit of time to talk about, I can talk about the good old days. You know, there was a time when people, and sometimes it happens, it happened as recently as about 5 years ago, we were attacked by one fellow. And he didn't realise that Anaka Dunduli, one of the brahmacharis, had been trained in the Russian army. And it was a bit of a mistake for him to attack the ladies. He came up and swapped Kamsanas, I think it was Kamsanas, just whacked him right in the face, hit me on the back of the head. Because coming behind me was Anaka Dunduli, and he just came running at me like, kicked him and threw him into the ground. In the early, in the 70s, you know, the police would come and put you in jail, and people would just pick fights with you. And, you know, very often you get this, you know, one drunk guy, there's about, you know, a dozen brahmacharis, and then one drunk guy comes along and decides he's going to take on 12, you know, brahmacharis who are all looking for a fight. Anyway, utility is the principle, but we shouldn't overdo it at the same time. Should be detached. The whole idea is that one should be a little bit detached. So Sankhya appears to involve detachment from matter, and devotion appears to involve attachment to the work, but actually it's detached work. It's not attached work like the work of the karmis. And Prabhupada explains in the purport, the real purpose of philosophical research is to find the ultimate goal of life. Since the ultimate goal of life is self-realization, there is no difference between the conclusions reached by the two processes. Did I read this? No. By Sankhya philosophical research, one comes to the conclusion that the living entity is not a part and parcel of the material world, but of the Supreme Spirit Soul. So that's the goal of Sankhya, is to understand the Spirit Soul's relationship with the material world, and then ultimately with the spiritual realm, or with the spiritual whole. Consequently, the Spirit Soul has nothing to do with the material world. His actions must be in some relation with the Supreme. When he acts in Krishna consciousness, he is actually in his constitutional position. In the first process, Sankhya, one has to become detached from matter, and in the devotional yoga process, one has to attach himself to the work of Krishna consciousness. Finally, factually, both processes are the same, although superficially one process appears to involve detachment and the other process appears to involve attachment. But Prabhupada makes this very clear distinction. Detachment from matter and attachment to Krishna are one and the same. Because one who is attached to Krishna is automatically detached from matter. When one is engaging in devotional service and is making spiritual advancement, then he's very happy. He's totally satisfied. In fact, Prabhupada makes the point that you can't actually renounce something if you haven't got something better to go to. And that's what really what the process of devotional service is all about. We're able to give up the activities of the material world because we have something better in the spiritual realm. One who can see this, it sees things as they are. That's the last. I read 5-6. Merely renouncing all activities yet not engaging in the devotional service of the Lord cannot make one happy, but a thoughtful person engaged in devotional service can achieve the Supreme without delay. So, Yoga Yukta Muni Brahma Na Chiren Adigacchati. So one who engages in devotional service, a muni, like a thinker, or a thoughtful person, as a devotee is thoughtful, and it does require some thought. We need to, you know, actually meditate on this point that I'm doing this for Krishna. What's that? Is that Idam Krishna, Idam Namama, one of my favorite verses. Idam this Krishnaya. This is for Krishna. Idam namama. This is not for me. So that's the meditation of a devotee. Because very often, I don't know about you, but I often think, I'm doing this for me. Even when I'm, I've got a shaker, I've got a tilaka, and chant Hare Krishna, then I'm worrying about, well, what's in it for me? But actually the devotee shouldn't worry about what's in it for me, because he knows Krishna will protect him.
That word, Muni.
Yeah.
Is that a, it's the same as like a,
Mahamuni.
Yeah.
Narada Muni. It means a thoughtful person. That's a devotee. It's the name of a devotee.
I've heard Prabhupada, I've read somewhere, I can't remember, I'm just trying to think.
Yeah, he talks about the Munis who agitate their minds and think of all sorts of different speculations. It's not that kind of a Muni. It's a thoughtful person. A devotee. So, in this next set of verses, Krishna has explained the superiority of devotional service over renunciation, right? So now, text 7 to 12, we're only going to go up to 9, but in text 7 to 12, Krishna emphasizes this point, how to perform karma yoga, how to perform the sacrifice, in other words. So that when I'm walking down the street, this is the thing, actually one has to deliberately think, I'm doing this for Krishna. I'm walking down the street, I'm doing it for Krishna, I'm not doing it for myself. You have to think about that. Whereas we just sort of cruising on, oh, I wonder what's going to happen to me today. Am I going to get what I want? But it's nice actually to think, oh, I'm doing this for Krishna. Oh, maybe I should be doing this, I better go and do something for Krishna and not something for myself. One in knowledge of Krishna understands his incompatibility with material nature. That's transcendental knowledge, right? And thus acts only for purification. That's the sacrifice. We should be acting only for Krishna's pleasure and be detached from the result. We're sacrificing that tendency for, greed, profit, distinction, adoration, all these things. Give the results of the work to Krishna. This is Nishkam Kama Yoga. This is how one's meant to be acting. We're supposed to be acting, thinking, I'm Krishna's. And I'm doing this for Krishna. Because everything around here belongs to Krishna. It's not for me. And then, it's interesting here. What happens when you do that? This verse is again, really nice. Yoga Yukto Vishuddhatma. When one engages in this process, yoga yukta, right? When one engages in the process of bhakti yoga, what happens? Vishuddhatma, one becomes a purified soul. Amazing. Vishuddhatma. And what else? Vijitatma, one becomes self-controlled. Jitendriya, we've got Jitendriya here. Conquered the senses. One conquers the senses so that one becomes purified, the mind and the senses come under the control. And as a result, then, sarva bhutatma bhutatma. One becomes a friend to everybody. Like the devotee is working actually for the benefit of everybody, so he's a friend of everybody. I don't know if you've noticed it, but sometimes, you're walking down the street and everybody just says, hi, how's it going? You ever notice that? It happens to me many times. Even I've gone into the city and people open up doors for me. I think, what's wrong with these people? Am I getting that old? But they're just doing it because they actually want to be respectful to a devotee. You know what I mean? It didn't happen to me until we got over 30.
Yeah.
People just want to be friendly to the devotees. Oh, how's it going?
Yeah.
So, is that a fine?
Sometimes it's annoying.
Huh?
Sometimes it's annoying because you're so impure.
Yeah, don't let it get to you.
No.
Or like I was saying, I mentioned the other day when I was in Pandapur, and this gentleman saw me and he just immediately offered his obeisances, bowed down and offered his obeisances. Especially in India, people recognise the fact that a sadhu or a saintly person is actually acting for the benefit of everybody. And they do that by distributing knowledge, by trying to engage everybody in devotional service. That really benefits everyone. So the devotee goes out of their way to try and engage others in devotional activities. But then again, you know, that can be a very subtle thing. Just walking down the street, dressed as a devotee, with tilak on, makes people automatically think of Krishna. Right? Very powerful thing. It's just being there. The presence of a devotee reminds people, oh, ooh, yeah, Krishna. Ooh.
Even if they've never heard of Krishna or no idea.
Sorry?
Even if they've never heard of Krishna or
maybe. I have on occasion, you know, met people and they say, yeah, what are you? What are you doing? What are you dressed like that for? They say, I'm Hare Krishna. What's that?
Whoa.
Which planet did this guy come from?
Even people who know the dress and the cold, they don't know about Krishna. They say, are you Hare Krishna? And when we go for catholics, like Philippa and are you Hare Krishna?
They get benefit by it. They actually get benefit. If they think of Krishna, if they chant Hare Krishna, they actually get benefit.
Even if they don't know that Hare Krishna, they still think that way. Servants of God.
Yeah.
They think of God.
They want to know what religion you belong to.
You chant Hare Krishna loud enough too when you're walking down the street.
Yeah.
But people are saying, especially from India, they can't stop looking at you when they see japa and you're chanting. They're trying to look at the other side. What?
And you know, a devotee isn't actually able to see. He can see the equality of all living entities. You know, with a engagement in devotional service, one then gets realization. One's actually able to see the equality of all living entities. And because he sees them as Krishna's parts and parcels, then he has affection for them. And they are affectionate to him because they see that he's actually working for the benefit of everybody. They're pleased with the work of the devotee. In the last verse, Krishna explains what the consciousness is of a devotee. Prabhupada tells the story of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. The devotee feels that actually Krishna is directing his activities and Krishna is facilitating them. A person in the divine consciousness, although engaged in seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, eating, moving about, sleeping and breathing, so that's practically everything that we do, right? How does he think? Manyeta tatvavit. So while he's doing all of these things, he's thinking, I'm not the doer. Prabhupada gives the example of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He would say, you know, I will do this, or I'll go here, or I'll do that, or do another thing. Krishna willing. So the devotee sees that whatever I'm able to do, it only takes place because of Krishna allowing it. Man proposes and God disposes. So that mentality is illustrated here. He always knows within himself that he actually does nothing at all. Because while speaking, evacuating, receiving, or opening or closing his eyes, he always knows that only the material senses are engaged with their objects and that he is aloof from them. No, I'm not the body, I'm a spirit soul. The material body is working and I'm just observing the actions of the senses with the objects of the senses. That's pretty amazing, isn't it? That's a transcendentalist. So that's the kind of mentality that one is recommended to cultivate in Krishna consciousness. And that's where the detachment comes from. He understands, I'm not doing this. This is being facilitated. Ishvaraha sarvabhutanam hridesha arjuna tishtati brahmayam sarvabhutanam jantra rudhani mayaya. Krishna says that I am situated in everybody's heart and I'm directing the wanderings of all of the living energies who are situated as if on a machine made in the material energy. So the material energy is facilitating the movements of all of the spirit souls according to their desires and according to their actions and the karma that they get. It's all being arranged by Krishna. So a transcendentalist who's situated in knowledge and who's practicing karma yoga, if you like, or bhakti yoga. Karma yoga means basically bhakti yoga in this case. He's able to elevate his consciousness to this point of being able to see that actually the material energy is working and he's separate from it. That's self-realization, basically. Being able to see oneself separate from the body. And most devotees get some basic realization of that fact as they perform their devotional service. Okay, I think I might finish it. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Who wants to go home?
Oh, a quick funny story.
Funny story?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know what part of the class relates to, but I'll tell it anyway.
Right.
Last week, Wednesday, Harinam. Actually, the last 2 weeks, not including yesterday, it rained straight after Harinam. Like straight after Harinam, it started raining. It didn't rain all day before that. But so we were waiting for the tram and there was big storms and trees were falling on the tram lines and the tram.
That wasn't just a rain, that was like
crazy space
over here.
Yeah, so
I'm glad that doesn't happen every time we go around and every day.
Yeah. So the 112 it came eventually after we waited for a while. And then he said he's only going one stop, so we're waiting there the whole time and he's only going one more stop. So we ran over to the number one, the number one here. And it was raining. So I just ran up to some guy with an umbrella, just hopped under his umbrella. and I said, oh, how you going, you know, you finished work out like this. And he was really nice, he was like, you know, he was no worries when he came under his umbrella. I said, oh, he said, what have you been up to? I said, we've just been chanting on the street. And he said, oh, so you guys have brought the rain. And he said, straight on, you guys have done this, eh? You brought the rain, yeah. And he's a nice guy, you know, and we thought he might have read Prabhupada's books once or something, I don't know, but he knew that the second time he actually had brought the rain. It was pretty surprising, right? He's a nice, really nice person.
Must have read the Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah, that's what we thought, he must have read something. That's funny.
So, anybody here tried this renunciation process?
Yeah.
How successful were you? I remember when I first became a devotee, I used to try to cut down on my eating. You know, I usually succeed in, you know, the devotees used to get these really, they get small bowls and small plates.
Yeah, we do that.
Oh, wow.
Gave up on that one, man. Just make it mess.
Yeah, so, you know, you, for a week we're able to just eat a little bit, but then, you know, the Sunday feast comes along and all of a sudden, so it's better to be, you know, equipoised. Yoga Bhavati Dukaha. Krishna explains in the 6th chapter, yuktahara viharasya, you should be regulated in one's eating and one's sleeping. Yukta tenta sakarma su, yukta svapnava bhavadasya, yoga bhavadi dukkaha. So, recommended that one be balanced, equipoised, rather than, you know, being a big renunciate. I know one devotee who used to, she was attached to sleeping on the floor with no bedding. I'm a yogi. Be really renounced. Thinking that that's a measure of spiritual advancement, that, you know, you can sleep on the floor without a bed. I won't tell the rest of the story, that's a bit sad, but anyway. Sometimes people think this, they think, yes, I'm really renounced, therefore I'm making advancement. But you know, the Goswamis would forget to sleep because they were so absorbed in their devotional service. Right? And yet, like this example of Rupa Goswami, when in India, it's traditional for, you know, wealthy men to go to suttas and say, okay, I want to do something for you, I want to do some service. Rupa Goswami, you know, one wealthy merchant came to him, offered him crores of rupees, and said, what did Rupa Goswami tell him to do? Okay, build a temple for Krishna. It wasn't for himself. He wasn't doing it for himself. So that's why Prabhupada says renunciation means not just giving everything up, right? But renunciation means using everything in Krishna's service. Keep minimal for yourself. Minimal for yourself, but not, you know, totally renounced. We see that when we try to push everything away, then eventually we'll be pulling it back in. So then accept that, you know, your quota, that's okay. Because in the Upanishad, it's explained how each one of us is given our quota. Actually, Prabhupada, I was reading in the class today, Prabhupada was saying, an elephant can eat 100 pounds of vegetables twice a day. Huh? And an ant only eats, you know, a grain of sugar, or, you know, really small amount. The elephant should think, oh, okay, you know, I need to be renounced now, I'm only going to eat the amount that the ant's going to eat. And the ant can't think, you know, oh, I'm going to eat more. I'm going to eat like an elephant. He can't. Each one of us has our quota, and we're allowed to accept our quota for our maintenance. That's okay. That's, you know, just renouncing what would normally be your quota is just stupid. It's false renunciation. Rather, we take our quota, fill our, you know, stomach up, what does Prabhupada say? Half of food, quarter of liquid, a quarter of air, something like that. Then you'll be healthy. So we accept our quota, and then we utilize that in Krishna's service, rather than thinking, yeah, I'll be really advanced. You know, Raghunath Das was drinking 6 drops of buttermilk every second day. That was his... He was so absorbed in his devotional service that, practically speaking, he wasn't aware of what his body was doing. As this verse points out here, the devotee is so absorbed in his devotional service on an elevated platform, he's not even conscious of what his body is doing. Because practically speaking, his consciousness is in the Nitya Lila pastimes with Krishna. That's how elevated. Huh? He's so elevated that he's performing devotional service in his Siddha Deha, huh? Absorbed in that, and he's forgotten about the fact that he's actually got a material body. Hmm. Anything else?
I remember the
story. Tell a story too.
Yeah, short one. Probably everybody knows about detachment.
Detachment.
When one senior devotee and one neophyte, they were walking, and then there was a lady that wanted to cross the river.
Yes.
Then she asked him to carry her, not to make that beside. Then the senior one, the younger one didn't want to do it, and the older one did it. And they continue walking, then the neophyte was all the way thinking, why did he do it? He's a sannyasi, he shouldn't be doing it. He shouldn't touch a woman. Then finally, after 2 hours of walk, he said, why did you do it? Why did you touch a woman? Why did you carry her across? He said, I did it for 1 minute, and you did it for 2 hours. You know, because you were 2 hours, you were meditating about...
Yeah, that's just right.
I'm not sure if I...
I think it originates from the Buddhist tradition, that story. Detachment is sannyas is not a state of dress, but it's a state of consciousness. And we can cultivate sannyas at any stage of our career, even as a householder. One can be renounced by being detached. And not, you know, oh no, the kids are screaming and I'm not getting enough sleep, I think I'll leave home to go to sannyasi. we'll leave it at that. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki
jai.
Thursday night, go to bed early, ki jai. What time are you going to the farm?
6 a.m.
Don't forget, you've got to be back on Saturday night.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, one thing I wanted to mention to everybody. Two things, actually. All right. We're having a Dapa retreat on Anzac Day weekend, which is not this weekend. Not the weekend after, but the weekend after that, on the 25th. So, if you want to take the opportunity of improving your japa, then it's an option we recommend you consider. Also, I don't know if you've noticed, but on the notice board, there's a blue poster which describes a research project that's being undertaken by a girl who's a research fellow in the Department of Psychology at Melbourne University. And she's doing a study on well-being, right? And in the 60s and 70s, it was touted by the psychologists that involvement in, you know, religious groups, especially like ours, basically harmed a person's mental health. Right? But what they're discovering is exactly the opposite. That people who belong to spiritual groups have a greater sense of well-being than people who don't. Research has been done in the UK, and the devotees participated in that research, and of all of the people who belong to a religious community, the people who demonstrated the greatest degree of well-being were the Hare Krishnas. Right? So anyway, this girl, Michelle Lim, she came and spoke to me about it, and I told her that we would help out, and she's had a few devotees have participated, but she wants more. So I would strongly encourage you all to get her telephone number, and they do tests. There's a psychometric test that they'll do, and it's standard for everybody, and from that they'll then be able to gauge, you know, how mentally well adjusted you are. But anyway, look, it's good for us, it's very good.
I nominate Adam.
No, all of you should do it.
you'll get $20, you'll get, they'll give you $20. You'll get $20 for doing it, and I'd like to help her out. And look, I'll tell you what, in the early 1980s, there's a famous study done by a chap called Michael Ross. He became very famous in the community of psychology, the psychologist community, demonstrating that actually the longer a person stays in the Hare Krishna movement, the better their mental health becomes. And he did that here in this temple in Melbourne. They did tests in 1978, and they came back again 3 years later and did it in 1981. And then sometime later he put out his research, and that was groundbreaking research at the time, which demonstrated that people who practice Krishna consciousness for some time demonstrated higher levels of mental health than all the normal people. Michael Ross? No, he's not, but it boosted his career, so he's probably quite favourable to the devotees. So I would really encourage you to get in touch with Michelle. She's a really nice girl, and you know, it will basically just promote us as well, that we're all sane people, and you know, everybody should become a Hare Krishna. So if you've got some time, the information is on the website, on our website. I'll put it up again, and the information is also on the board here, and it's compulsory for all the brahmacharis and the brahmacharinis. Let me know when you're going, and we'll make sure you hand it in.